Okay,
Oh, what's that
everybody.
say? Huh?
La croix. All right, guys.
Well, yeah, if you're American. Like,
all right, guys. We have the fast picture. Yeah, the fast picture. It is a tremendous honor. In from Israel. Back again. And we got the whole band back together again. So without further ado, we're going to have Rabbi Nachum Lietag share some Torah.
So,
if she thought you want to give up the sheets now.
No, never in the beginning.
The new sheet situation.
We'll give it in the middle.
No
one listens. If you give it, everyone looks at the sheet, they try to figure out. No one listens. I learned my lesson the hard way. What I wanted to do is put a puzzle together in Chumash. So because we're learning Sefer Bereshit, like every week, move another couple of chapters. You know the stories, don't you? But I'm going to start with the question. And it won't make much sense, but just give me a minute to play a game, okay? Real hard question. Who knows three? Who knows three? Yeah. Three are the. Okay, I'll vote. That's that? Yeah. And who knows four? Four are the. Okay. Is it simple? Now, think for a minute. Is that what you would you expect that to be the case? And we know that's what happened. What would make more sense? That if you were writing the Bible or writing the story, what would you expect to happen? Yeah, one matriarch for patriarch. It's surprising that we find that either one matriarch for patriarch, everyone should have two or something, but it would make a lot of sense. No one would be surprised if there was three matriarchs and three patriarchs, right? For example, you guys went to Hebron? You went to Marsa Machpelah? There's only room for one each, right? It got so crowded, they had to bury Rachel, you know, somewhere else. Yes. Now, just keep that in storage, okay? Now, think for a minute. You said three patriarchs, right? Can you define what makes a patriarch? Forget the definitions. But tell me, why is Yaakov a patriarch and Yosef not a patriarch? You agree that Yaakov is and Yosef's not, right? Otherwise, we'd have four patriarchs. In what way is Yosef different than Yaakov? You understand my question? Oh. So, how is Yaakov different? Because what's special about Yaakov compared to Yosef? In other words, all the Jews, we all stem, everyone is a descendant of Yaakov, but not everyone's descendant of Yosef. Agreed? Makes sense? It's real simple. I'm not asking her questions. Okay. Now. So, what? That's right. Yeah, but Yaakov, all his children are the Jewish people. Yosef's only one of the 12. That's what I'm saying. But everyone's from Yaakov. Not everyone's from Yosef. Now, what makes Yitzchak a patriarch? Now, if that's the definition of a patriarch, a lot of Romans are also then. Yeah. So Yitzchak's different than Yaakov, right? In what way? Not all of his kids are chosen. So what makes him a patriarch? So why isn't Terach a patriarch? Or Noach a patriarch? Terach, one of Terach's children are chosen, yeah? What blessing? Oh, you're saying? The reason why Yaakov is in, and Esav is out, was because of the blessing. There's that little mix up there. Yeah, but yes, yeah.
Right,
the
God is one.
Yeah. So anyone who recognizes God as one becomes Jewish. It's a patriarch. No, Esav didn't believe in God, and it could be, but we don't. Commission doesn't tell us about that. Maybe he thinks he was a god. That happens later on. I'm not saying that it could be that we don't know, and Chumash doesn't tell us about it. Chumash never discusses what they believe in. Pretty sure. They wait for Maimonides for things like that. Back then, people didn't say that about Avram either. I mean, oh yeah. I mean, he yeah, yeah. Yeah, definitely talking about God. But if it doesn't talk about him, Chumash doesn't say, oh, that he discovered God. The Midrash embellishes, adds that in, making. Because he must know about God.
You're not going to declare God unless you have a
yeah,
version
but
of
I'm
God.
Saying, but that doesn't define the patriarch. Because other people can put that. Okay, so you mentioned a lot of things there. So we'll take it one at a time. Okay? You said Abraham was chosen by God or God chose Abraham? And Esau failed the test? Oh, wait, let's go back. We jumped from Yitzhak to Avram already. Because I did. So listen, let me just one more question. You'll see where I'm going. Okay. You mentioned the blessing. Terach didn't get a blessing. A blessing? What was his blessing?
Stars and the...
Okay. I'm so happy you said blessing. It's a blessing you said blessing. Why? So, yeah. Is Lech Lecha a blessing? What's Lech Lecha? That's a command, right? Take a hike. Let me take a tool. Okay, take a hike, yeah. Now, if someone told you, start a journey, what would you want to know? And God said where? To where? Where I show you. Okay. So if you're obedient and believe in God, you just say, okay, just give me a GPS, I'll follow you, okay? What should the next line be? After God says, start a journey to this land, and okay, whatever land, what would you expect the next line to be? Think logically. All my questions are real simple. Like... What?
Yeah.
Okay, that's easy. God said he follows God. Stay better. But what would you? What would everyone want to know? What? What? What's good? What was that? Why are you sending me? Now, that would be a good question, right? Now, is the answer? What should the answer be? Why is God sending Abraham? To receive a blessing? So, what is the next line in Chumash? Do you remember? God says, "V'escha l'goy gadol. I'll make you a great non-Jew." No, I'm sorry. What's a goy? I'm sorry, yeah, I got that wrong. Because I did a Google Translate and it said a non-Jew. Goy gadol, but goy actually in Labo doesn't mean a non-Jew. A goy means a nation. I'm just joking. Now, what? Next one, and I'll bless you. He says, I'll bless those who bless you. Actually, he says, you'll be a blessing. And through you, I'll be blessed. What I'm getting at, the reason I make think of a blessing is Avram. Chosenness, is it about reward or about purpose? I'm talking about a fundamental issue. It's super educational also. Is being chosen mean you're receiving something extra, you're receiving some presence, some blessing, you're getting something? Or is it a responsibility? Yeah. We often view it, you're receiving something. But in essence, it's a responsibility. Because what does God want? The biggest theme of the God wants a nation. Got it? Now, that's the biggest theme of the Torah. It's about a nation. Now it's not about privilege, it's about responsibility. Understand the difference? Now, from the user end, we want to hear about privilege. But from the prophetic point of view, it's all about responsibility. Now, why is it that God wants a nation? I mean, it really doesn't explain too much, but unless you analyze the stories. But what would God gain by choosing a nation? Yeah. So does God created? Does God have expectations from civilization, from humankind? You know, based on the first 11 chapters to Abram, Give me a proof that God has certain expectations about human behavior. Why? He wasn't happy. He was not a happy deity. Right. And before then? Why?
When Hashem described the earth as it was made, it's also said that the earth was like undone as it wasn't worked yet. So even since creation, there was the expectation that
somebody's got to work the land. We need somebody to work the land. Yeah, but most of the stories like this, who's that first man that God made? Adam. Yeah. Did he do something wrong? Did he get punished? And what's the next story in Chumash about? Did he do something wrong? He got punished? Okay. And what's the next story? The flood. Did they do something wrong? They got punished? And the next story? Tower of Babel. It's not clear what they did wrong, but they did. He wasn't happy. But what's happening in Chumash in the first before Avram comes on the scene? God is consistently not a happy deity. You know where I get what's that from? You know, like he's not a happy camper. I'm just used to camp. You know. Did people say that? Maybe I'm dating myself. God's upset with man's behavior. Now, if all the stories before Abraham is chosen have one overarching idea that God is upset, has expectations from human behavior, is upset by them, I can go in one of two directions. Either God gave up and only wants Abraham back with everybody else. That's racism. And then the other possibility is that God cares about everybody, but for the sake of everybody, God's picking a nation to have an impact because there's an assumption in Chumash that behavior is contagious. You ever hear that concept, the behavior is contagious? When one car cuts the line, everyone is going to start cutting the line, right? If people wait in line, behavior is contagious, isn't it? That's what humans are. And what's the hope? That if some people, and people behave, not just behavior of individuals is contagious, behavior of nation, like one nation starts conquering land and attacking other nations. Remember the domino theory? No, yeah, you weren't born yet. I was. In other words, that we got stuck in Vietnam for that. But the idea is, if they'll do it to one, it'll happen again and again and again. It's called. But in general, it could be that God wants a nation, and how would that nation? God would rather humans or civilization be good. But the hope is, at least if there's one nation dedicated to being good, being a model nation, maybe then that might have an impact. God's not saying it will work, but it could work. Got the difference? And the difference is, when you're studying Chumash, is they're all about blessing. Oh, we were chosen, we received, oh, we got this cool land, we got those things, or we're giving responsibility. Now, to fulfill the responsibility, you need a vehicle. Like a police person. Police, didn't say policeman? Okay, it's okay. Because I was told I can't say mankind.
The wrong guy.
Okay, yeah. I was told I have to say humankind, not mankind. I get used to that. But policeman's still okay? Not a police person? Okay. Got to get my. No, I'm being. I'm just wondering what the. Every couple of years, things change a little bit. It's good. Humankind is progressing. Somewhere. Well, okay. Yeah, changing. I mean, if things didn't change, nothing would grow. So what happened? Oh, that's what I'm getting at. A key point of Chumash that God wants a nation, and a nation needs a land, and a nation needs people. And most of the conversation between God and Abraham and Sefer Bereshit are about starting that nation. Now, if Chumash was a fairy tale, I think there should be one forefather, not three. God should pick Abram. Remember? Bless him with children, lots of children. Give him a land. He should take over the land and start a nation, right? If God wants a nation, I'd expect, in the fairy tale version, God picked Abraham. That's what God told Abraham, right? You're going to be a nation. You have lots of kids. And he comes to Israel, starts talking about God. What should happen? You should take over the nation. You should get the land, have lots of children, and start a nation. What happens instead? It takes decades so he has children. Not all of them are chosen. He's involved in a war that conquers all the land, has to give it away. Isn't he? It's a complicated story. And then later in the conversation, what's Abraham find out? That, oh, the land I promised you? No. Guess what? You're on a pilot trip. And goes down. Who has to go down to Egypt? Not you, but you were on a pilot trip down there. But the kids I promised you, before they become a nation, like someone said, by being tested, not just Abraham being tested, the people of Israel have to go through suffering, servitude, and slavery, and affliction, and only afterwards they'll be redeemed, and only afterwards they get the land. That's not punishment for Abraham. That's basic training to become that nation. Understand what I'm getting at? I'm trying to think what's happening in Bereshit. Now, once we become that nation, and before we conquer the land and set up that nation, we don't go from Egypt right to the promised land. We stop first at Mount Sinai, and we enter a covenant. So at the seed level, the covenant takes place with Abraham. But at the national level, it takes place with the people. But in order to receive that covenant, we had to go through basic training in Egypt. Because in that covenant, we have laws about our behavior as a nation, our national behavior. And throughout the law code, there's this motivator line that doesn't stop, which is, you know, be kind. Remember you were a slave. Remember you were a stranger. Remember how they mistreated you. Over and over again, isn't it? It's almost like a broken record. Now, if when we get the law code, we have numerous laws, and the motivator phrase is, you know, it's be kind, be sensitive, be considerate. Remember you were once mistreated. Remember you were once, you know, people, you were vulnerable and people took care of you. I mean, took advantage of you. When you become sovereign, you become my nation, you have to do, you have to be the opposite. You have to, that memory has to be transformative. That memory shapes your behavior. I understand the difference between going down to Egypt as a punishment or something like that, or a mistake, as opposed to an essential element of our existence and a part of our chosenness. That the theme is so important. There's some people have a beautiful custom that once a year, they have like this whole family gathering and they make a whole big deal and they like dedicate a whole week to remembering that whole slavery in Egypt experience. They were crazy about it. And some people talk about it every day, and every day and every night when they pledge allegiance to their covenantal commitment. What am I talking about? When you say Shema, you're pledging allegiance, right? You're not saying I believe in it. You're saying I understand that God chose me to serve Him, chose to serve Him, and part of that memory, that is only commitment to the covenant, but remembering why not that He took you out of Egypt, but why He took you out of Egypt. Right? There's a difference between saying thank you, oh, you saved me, as opposed to remembering why you saved me. We're not just thanking God for taking us out of Egypt, we're thanking God for putting us in to take us out. Not that idea? It's a big, it's almost defining in our Judaism. So that's one big thing. Now, That's important. I mean, that's the important stuff. I'm going to do the fun stuff now. That's what should have happened. But Abraham should have been, there's a covenant with Abraham, not just a blessing, but a covenant and a covenantal purpose and a goal and an ethos, etc. Now, but why, from all of Abraham's children, who's chosen? Just Yitzchak. Who's out? Ishmael. I want to hear a nominee. Who decided Ishmael was out? Any other nominee? That was a quick everyone. Well, you're down on her. What'd she do wrong? Oh, that was her decision. You guys agree?
No.
What?
Sarah's very, very high level.
Oh, she's like she knew more than her husband? Was it her decision or God's decision? Or God agreed to her decision? Yeah, that's for the rabbi. The most difficult verse in the Bible where God tells Abraham, you have to listen to your wife. How they snuck that in there. And some people say that's you're learning Talmud a little bit, right? It's called that's a principle, building a principle, and you apply that to everything else. Yeah. And other people hold that it's, we learn from there Usually you don't, only when God says you have to. So you can go either way.
Well, if you think like, you know, like the studying the water proof report is wrong, if you think it's made up by a bunch of men and each a while
ago. Yeah, that's right. That's one proof that it's yeah. Now, so let's get to the fun part, okay? Oh, okay. We're good? That's not a problem. Okay. Always have to be candid. No, so what I want to share with you is that you said that it was Sarah's decision. No other nominees? And so does the Bible. Because when Sarah says no, that's in chapter 21. But in chapter 17, called Brit Milah, the covenant, God tells Abraham, he has a new name, El Shaddai, you might remember that name, special. He changes his name from Avram to Abraham, from Avram to Abraham, and tells him, Sarah's name changed also, Sarai. He enters a covenant with him, changing the name, and he promises Avram, you're going to have a child from Sarah, and it's no laughing matter. Understand? And God decides, tells Avram, call him Isaac, because Avram left in bewilderment. And Avram said, I'm happy with Ishmael. You know, Ishmael is fine. And God says, Ishmael will be great, he'll be blessed, but my covenant will be with Isaac. That was God's decision. Now, how come you all said Sarah? Sarah didn't decide that he's out of the choosing process. When Yitzhak is ready for nursery school, remember after he's weaned? There's a party, right? What does Sarah notice? There's Hagar's kid over there. It's a shtickle troublemaker. You know what that is? No. He's playing cards. Whatever he is, okay? And when they're in daycare, okay, what difference make, you know, change that diaper, that part. When you're starting nursery school and you're learning, you know, Modani, and you're learning Brochas, you're learning, you know, fellowship stuff. You follow? You know, you're starting your thing. This, the dilemma of almost every Jewish community, do I send my kids to the school with the best education or the best friends? Understand? No, it's because it's more important who your friends are than who your teachers are. Ask any parent in Teaneck, right? And every year, every couple of years, there's a new school in Teaneck for even the better kids, you follow? Because we can't send a kid with those. I'm sort of making fun. But what I'm getting at, what's Sarah saying? Now that he's three, he's weaned now, right? They can't grow up in the same house together. Why can't they? Because God decided he's not going to join. You follow? She's not deciding he's out. That's the reason why he has to go out. Sarah's not deciding he's not chosen. Sarah's saying they can't grow up in the same house together because God decided he's not chosen. Understand? But at that point, you'll see how important that's going to be. Because it's from the very beginning, it was God's decision. Now, how is Ishmael different than Yitzhak? Was it, did he do something wrong? Did Ishmael lose it? That can't be why. Because God decided before Yitzhak is born that before, it's not a meritocracy. I think that's the right word. Yeah. It's God just decided, that's all. And he says, Ishmael will be great, he'll be blessed. There's nothing wrong with not being chosen. You have to do something wrong to be chosen. In fact, the people who do the most wrong things are the ones who were chosen in the end, right? You know, the brothers, oh my gosh. Not to mention Yaakov's whole life. So it's not, being chosen is not because you were better. Maybe you have to learn from your mistakes, that's something else. What I'm getting at, that decision of who's the forefather, who's the patriarch, that's God's decision. Now, that at least now we got Yitzchak. That was God's deciding. Now Yitzchak has, I should ask a question. Had Sarah had more than one child, would they both be chosen? Good question, right? And we never will know, what? Good. Is that a good question? We'll never know, will we? But we have sort of, we can bring a test case one. Because in the next generation, Yitzhak has what? Two children. How many wives? And she's a matriarch, right? Yeah, she's in Marsha Machpelah, right? She's a matriarch. Agreed? Now, how many are chosen? And one. Which one's out? What am I going to ask? Who decided Esav's out and Yitzhak's, who decided Esav's out and Yaakov's in? Give me some nominees. Rivka, of course you say Rivka, right? Now you're afraid to say Rivka because you were wrong with Sarah. What? You're saying he did. He cut himself out.
Plus one. I don't know if he did something that did something like that.
And what did he did? What did he do?
About yeah. His
birthright. Birthright. What's wrong? That's a commodity. Do I have it right? A commodity is something you can sell. Is birthright a commodity?
Well, I don't know. Gave it up.
What? What's it mean to have a birthright? You get like a double portion from your father? Oh, yeah, that's right. So it's a commodity. That's what Rashbam said. And Rashbam said, why do you sell it? Because in the futures market, it says go nowhere. It's like he saw the balance sheets, said worthless. Yeah, it was a junk bond. What? That's right. It was a junk bond. Better than nothing. At this point, yeah, that's one approach. No, the question is birthright privilege or responsibility? Got it? And maybe he doesn't want that responsibility. That's the way the rabbis understand it. He was about to die. It wasn't Yaakov was using leverage. It wasn't that he's about to die if he doesn't get that ball of soup. He just came from a hard day's work. He wants the remote control and a beer. You follow? Back then, a ball of soup.
I'm told he had killed
him. And that's why he's about to die? Or that's why he's so tired? Okay. But that's definitely not in Chumash. But I want you to appreciate Midrash. You follow? Midrash is such a beautiful embellishment. But it's always important to be able to differentiate between what's an embellishment for multiple reasons why, you know, as opposed to what's the text itself. Because this text is our heritage. So if you put your children to sleep at night, you have to tell them stories. So you make up stories that fit the Bible. You follow? It could be it's historically true. But there's so much literature taking the stories in the Bible and embellishing them. For multiple reasons. They teach you halakha, they teach you morals. But when a rabbi wants to say something in ancient times, people always have what to say. The custom was up until about 1,000 years ago, no one published books and op-eds. You had something to say. The format was midrash. You started with a biblical story or biblical verse or something. You start with the Bible and then you embellish. That's the format. You don't just write a paper. You don't write a law book or anything. You want to teach a law, you take some verse and say, oh, this is that and that. Everything is linked to some verse or some story. Got it? That's rabbinic style, which is beautiful. Don't be confused. It's not as if they make up a story or develop a story to teach an ideal or moral value or just to be interesting, it's still not in the text. Now, I'm trying, I don't want to belittle the Midrash because it's important, but you have to know where on the shelf it belongs. Now back to our questions. We're gonna run out of time. Okay. So who decided Yitzchak's out? Esau's out. That's a really complicated story, right? Now, Bechora, let me explain something about Bechora. Bechora, the birthright, is responsibility, but I can only talk about a Bechor when I have a family. So the question, what seems to be happening is that, you know why Rivka gets involved? There's something Rivka knows that Yitzchak doesn't know. Remember when she was expecting, she turned to God, what's going on here? Remember what God told her? Two nations, that's not two brothers, that's two nations. Remember the idea of a nation? God told Avram, you'll be a goy gadol, you'll be a nation. Yitzchak has every reason to assume that the nation will be Yaakov and Esav. Got it? Now, if the nation is Yaakov and Esav, and there's no reason why Yitzchak shouldn't think that, correct? Because she's a matriarch and he's a patriarch. And they make a Jewish people, you follow? Now, if they're both chosen and each of them need a job, who should be the family leader? Who should do the army, run the government? No, yeah. Esav's the man, isn't he? He could use a little guidance. What kind of job would Yaakov get? He could be a rabbi. Teacher, okay, accountant, okay, got it. But if both are in, I have to give a job fitting for them, and especially if Yitzhak Like, you never saw a father who can't say anything bad about their kids. Esav isn't so bad in simple pshat book. He's not, maybe he's not as diligent as learned as Yaakov, but he's a doer. Definitely respects his father. He gets things done. It makes sense that Yitzchak would think, if this is going to be the Jewish people, let Esav be the trait of leadership. Let Yaakov sit and learn. To this day, when you're raising money for a Haredi, for a black yeshiva, what do? Let the people work. Let the people learn. And the people work and support the people learning. I've seen that. It raises lots of money. It's such a logical idea. So in my kind of place, where we do the army and we work also and study, this modern approach. So we use that. I mean, again, it's subjective interpretation, but it's based, I think, is that to be the Jewish people, you need the hands of Esav and the voice of Yaakov. You understand what's behind the story? Chumash is setting up a drama where Rivka knows it's only one, and Yitzchak doesn't. And to become the Jewish people, to receive, not just the blessing, the guidance to be the people, you need to be a man of like Esav, but you also need the voice of Yaakov. But Esav can't be the one because he doesn't have nothing spiritual about him. Yaakov can't because he's nothing physical. He's nothing. And to be blessed, you need the traits of both. And to get the final blessing, what's Yaakov have to do? We send him to Lovin University. He's got to earn his degree. It's going to be a hard one. It's working out. And you know what his final exam is going to be? What's his final exam? Remember that fight he has with the angel? And what do the rabbis identify him as? The angel of Esav? In fact, you know what happens there? He gets a name change when he passes his test. He gets his diploma. And his name says Yaakov means sort of crooked. And Yisrael means strong, like overcoming and strong. Because his whole life he's been running away from conflict. And then God makes him, face the conflict. So, sometimes you have to fight. But it's not ideal. So you might come out limping. That story? Some people have a nice custom not to eat, like that part of the thing to remember that. What I'm getting at, there's so much steps in the story. The story is awesome because it's dealing with the dialectic of being a nation where you want to be connected to God, but you have to be involved and you have to make a living and be involved in politics, but also be that it's not simple. It's easy just to sit and learn or just to work. To have both in the same, that's a Zionist read, okay, or not a religious Zionist read, but the main thing I want to get is that for some reason it's three generations of choosing. Now, why God? That was God's decision. But God decided Yaakov and not Esav. Got it? But for some reason, for drama, Yitzchak doesn't find out about it. But it's clear to Yitzchak afterwards, once Rivka talks to him after the whole issue. But what they were talking about before that, Yaakov and Esav were growing up. Sure, they're both chosen. And that's why they're selling the birthright, not the chosenness. You understand the difference? Now, the fact that they're selling the birthright, the birthright's it's the leadership of the nation. They're arguing over who's going to lead the nation, not over who is the nation. Only it's turns out later only one of them was chosen. Okay. Now here comes the funnest part. I've been saying that over and over again. We get to the next generation, Yaakov. What are the possibilities? It might be another generation, not it? Maybe it'll be four forefathers. Maybe if that's about, I think someone dreamt something like that. Didn't Yosef have a dream that they're all bowing down to him? Maybe here we go again. Or maybe it's just a dream. What's it? Remember the dream's got a little glitch in it with the sun and the moon? Remember if the sun is a father and the moon is a mother, something's wrong there because his mother's gone? Whatever it is. But that's what Yaakov said, right? But I have another question. Go back to how we started. Let's assume what you all assumed. That for every patriarch, there should be one matriarch. Got it? Now, assuming there's only room for one matriarch, but let's say Yaakov is the end of the process, give me a new possibility that might come up now. If there's only room for one matriarch, who's the matriarch? Or who are the candidates? Or Leah? Yeah, definitely not the Hapletz, right? They're Hufflepuff. No one ever considered them. But I want to go back to what I said at the beginning. My assumption is, I think it's, you told me it was logical, that as the family's growing up, everyone knows, or is assuming, there's only room for one matriarch. And there's two candidates, Rachel and Leah. What does Yaakov hold? Why would Yaakov think it's Rachel? It's his wife. Of course it's Rachel. In fact, he says so. Tell me that 10 member. He says so. It's his wife. Now, Lavan tricked him. Okay, so he took responsibility for his mistake. I mean, that he got. So he takes care of Leah. And he'll put the kids through college. So, but who's the chosen family? Rachel's kids, right? How many kids does Rachel have? Got it? They'll be the Jewish people. Who's going to be the leader? What's going to be his uniform? There's a musical about it, right? The colored coat. Now, imagine that's what Yaakov grows up thinking. Imagine if Chas v'Shalom, something should happen to Yosef. You know, some disaster. And he would, you know, disappear, gone, assumed dead. How would Yaakov take it? He'd be devastated, wouldn't he? Now, what would be his last ray of hope? Could he play tackle football? Benjamin? Could he go on a class to you? No, he'll stay at home, your fellow. He'll be overprotected. Definitely not a tour down to Egypt, your fellow. You understand? Doesn't it explain all of Yaakov's behavior from beginning to end? That's why he favors you. It explains everything. It explains his whole attitude. He's totally depressed. And he'll never touch, he won't let Binyamin go, even if everyone else has to die. He says, because that's how he understands the Bechira process. And it's logical. And you proved him it's logical. So I played that game in the beginning with before. Now, what are Leah's kids thinking? Not what thinking, what do they know? Who's the matriarch? What's the proof? What? And what's that a sign? The what? Who does God want? Remember, God decides who's the chosen ones? Doesn't God talk to us through historical events? If you're those religious Zionists who say this is the redemption because, you know, look at the Balfour Declaration and the War of Independence and the Six-Day War. Didn't you ever hear that? I still teach that. And there's some, you follow? God doesn't always talk directly, talks to historical events. Wake up. But how did Levin pull that trick off? That wedding night. That's got to be wool. That's Hashkacha. You know, I say Hashkacha Pratis. That's divine, that goal. You follow? God said. Now, she has kids like that, right? Rachel? Nothing. What's that a sign of? God's up. That's, in fact, Yaakov says, what do you want? That's God's. God, it looks like God doesn't want Rachel. So he had Rachmanis. You know what that is? He had mercy, then gave her a kid. But she dies soon after, right? Isn't it obvious that God doesn't want Rachel when he wants Leah? It's a no-brainer to them. They're sure that they're the chosen sons. You follow? And as long as Yosef's playing with Bila and Zilpah's kids, they're fine. When Yosef starts dreaming about what? That's his leadership. He's the only one. You follow? Whoa, that's a danger. He just doesn't get it, does he? Now, the father's been wrong before. Remember, Yitzchak was wrong about Esav and Yaakov, and Avraham was wrong about Yishmael. So now, the brothers, they respect. There's 100 years age difference between them, almost. They're teenagers, and he's like over 100, Yaakov. And they know better, you follow? So he loved Rachel. So he's favoring Yosef. He'll get over it, but they know better. And now that Yosef's dreaming about what? Wool. He's chosen, you gotta get rid of him. The same Shemaim. You know what that means? The same Shemaim? They're sure they're doing the right thing. Because they know what God wants. And that's why they sell him. They don't want to kill him, but they want to get rid of him. Simply, that explains, I'll give you an example. Let's say, after Rachel died, who should go to Yaakov's tent? Leah. Imagine if you were one of Leah's kids, and after Rachel died, the old man still doesn't get it, and he takes Bila to his tent. Wouldn't you be really upset? Yeah. You know what Reuven does to protest? He does something to make sure that it won't happen. You ever read the Bible? Know what he did? He slept with Bila, and now she's forbidden on Yaakov, all for the sake of his mother. I'm trying to explain what that story is doing there. It makes sense now. Dina, you know what happened to Dina? Did Yaakov do anything about it? Who did something about it? Mm-hmm. It just proves to Leah's kids that he doesn't get it. You follow? This theory explains the entire book almost. It explains everyone's behavior. Everyone thinks they're doing the right. I call this, it's always good reasons for sinat chinam. And there's always good reasons for baseless hatred. Now, and it's all based on my opening question. Everyone's expecting one matriarch for patriarch. Did anyone ever dream that Bila and Zippo would be chosen? How could they be? Keturah's kids and Hagar's kids, what did I say, Hufflepuffs? They're half-bloods, aren't they? Now, what happened in the end? Yosef was sold to slavery. After he sold, he's sure that Leah's kids were right. What's the proof that they were right? He got sold. In fact, what's he name his first child? Got Menashe. Meaning God abandoned me. It says that's why he named them. And he forgot his dreams. They weren't dreams. That was it. What happens after 20 years? The brothers come down and bow down. You know the story, right? Then he remembers his dream. In the meantime, he's got his doctorate in divination, doesn't he? How did he get his first degree? With the butler and baker? Remember, he went to college in jail? Like the Paris. he got his master's doing Pharaoh's dream. He had a really nice job. He's working on his postdoc now. Okay? Got my joke? I mean, you got the idea? Now, in the meantime, also, he's a big shot in Egypt. But now he knows how to interpret dreams. And he remembered his brothers. Oh my gosh, my brothers are bowing down to me. Now, the glitch in the dream was the sun and the moon, right? Because what did everyone think the sun and the moon was? The mother and father. Now, do you know a country or nation that has a sun god? Well, a real bad named Ra. And their calendar is solar, isn't it? What area of the Middle East? I mean, I gave it away. As a moon god, they have like a moon like in their symbol, and they have a lunar calendar. Yeah, the whole Mesopotamia. Yeah, the lunatics. Now, is that where the word comes from? I think. Yeah. Now, who bowed down to Yosef? All of Egypt. That's just all of Egypt bowed down to him. The whole Middle East comes. That's why. Yaakov's kids are coming, right? Who was the sun and the moon in the dream? Egypt and Mesopotamia. So, in fact, if you remember the first dream, the first blessing Yitzchak gave, Yitzchak was a generation off. He says, he told him, Yavdu chamim yishtachvu lechalubim, other nations should bow down to you. The blessing Yitzchak gave Esav is exactly Yosef's dream. Remember what Yitzchak told Esav? Other nations should serve you and bow down to you. You should be the leader of your brothers. You should be wealthy. Remember? All the blessings that Yitzchak thought he was giving Esav as leadership of the family, they all fall on Yosef. Which is off by 100 years or generation. Now, what else was in the dream? Who knows 11? In Yosef's dream. And what are they doing? They're bowing down to another star because there's only sun and moon and stars up there. What's Yosef? Another star, but the main one. What was God telling Yosef? Why 11 stars and Yosef number 12 and everyone bowed to him? What are you, Yosef? You're not the only one. You're the leader. You're the Bechor. Yeah? But why 11? Guess what? Who's chosen? All of them, including, it's not, everyone's growing up thinking either Rachel or Leah. And what does Yosef realize? You're fighting for no reason. Why? We're all chosen. And even Hufflepuffs. Got it? Now it's so simple once you realize it, but it's always easy in hindsight. Now, what I think was happening, God in Yosef's dream, God's telling the brothers, there's nothing to fight about. You can, Yosef's the leader, but not the only one. And there's room for everybody, and there's a need for 12 tribes. Got it? But God can't tell them directly. I want to explain how Nevuah works. You have to figure it out on your own. That's life, if you know. If God just can't tell them, it's a process you have to go through to learn it. In every learning experience in life, if you go through an experience, the same thing. Why do you have to go through slavery and suffering? You have to experience it to appreciate it, to get the message. You have to, you know, you can do a theory in chemistry or in physics. If you have a lab and you understand the lab, it's a good lab, you'll be a much better physicist or a chemist. There's something about experience when you see something happening. Same thing with children. Everything works that way. So God gave them hints, but they had to figure out themselves. And when Yosef remembers, it's his sister now to bring the family back together again, to reunite them. But that's the thing. Now, I did all this. Let me give you the... Yeah, that's this page around. It's a lot of fun. This is the review. We have another couple of minutes. They'll tell you when the other. Yeah. And a whole bunch of those. We're taking a more another bag. There should be enough of those.
So why one? Making the case of there's three patriarchs and four matriarchs.
Yeah.
Why not just is there any way assert why does this, why not one?
Oh, okay. I'll get to Rafi's question. So that's going to be the everyone say that sure one or two. I have more in my gun. It should be enough. Yeah. I got one here. I got a couple of them here. I take these. One. Everyone have? You got more than your offset you need. So take a look at the top left. You see it? That's what we all know. You see the drawing? I call it Chernobyl Dorothy. You don't know what Chernobyl is. It looks like Simpson. A nuclear reactor. Yeah. Now the converging lines, that process I call Bechira. Understand by Bechira being chosen? That's God's decision. And so cool, it begins with Abraham's name change and ends with Yaakov's name change. And God's name is El Shaddai in that process. When it's over, we get the name changed to Israel. That's what we all know. But look, but what was Avram thinking? Now, you see what N is? I'm using algebra. N is the number of generations in this choosing process. N equals 3, got it? That's 3. That's who knows 3. But 3 means there's 3 generations in this choosing process, in selection. When we get to the critical point, everybody's chosen. At that point, we give out, the father gives blessings to everybody, but someone has to be the leader. Now, who should be the Bechor? Who should be the firstborn? Who's ever born first? But you can lose it. You can lose it for, that's where meritocracy comes in. By default, it's who's ever born first, but he can mess up. And he can, Reuven messes up big time with Bila, right? Shimon and Levi mess up in Shechem. But who proves his leadership qualities? Yehuda. Yehuda becomes a leader. That's from Leah's kids and from Rachel's kids. Yosef proves himself as a leader. And they have to share their leadership later on. Remember, there's a Mashiach of Yosef, Mashiach of Yehuda. There's leadership within the family and leadership of the family to other nations. So Yosef's the expert in international relations. And Yehuda organizes a coalition government. And everyone has different strengths. Got it? Baby's in charge of education in the end. But doesn't see what's happening pretty much? Now, Yitzhak thinks N equals 2. Understand what I mean by N? There's every reason to think that. Rachel knows N is greater than 2. It'll be the younger one. Now, Yosef's dreaming, and everyone thinks Yosef's dreaming N equals 4. See that third one on the left? Yeah. Before, why if there's 5? Now, N has to be a finite number, otherwise, we'll never have a nation. And then, Yaakov thinks N equals 3R. Got that? There's 3 generations, but only 1 matriarch, Rachel. Leah's kids think N equals 3L. Got it? And the end, Yosef's dream is it's N, and it's Rachel, Leah, and Bilhah and Zilpah. Okay? Now, I want to end with this question. Why? Now, I went in learning, I'll just skip a principle. This is what's called objective analysis, subjective interpretation. The main thing I try to share with you is an objective analysis. I'm trying to explain a theory, a model that explains everything that's happening. Mm-hmm. There's a process of Bechira that's up to God. And God decided 3 generations. We don't know why for sure. But I threw into this development, this drama going on, where our the patriarchs don't know how many patriarchs there's going to be. And my point is, no one knows N until it's over. And the solution will be in Yosef's dream, but we have to figure out on our own. And if I want to understand everyone's behavior, which is really strange, right? So once you make that assumption, there's only room for one matriarch, which is logical, then everyone, there's logical reasons for sinat chinam, for baseless hatred. Because everyone's sure they're doing the right thing. That's all the best drama in life, is everyone's sure they're doing the right thing. And they can't get along. And no one's right. Because they don't see the wider picture. But you have to learn the hard way. That's life. Now, but the big question, why is that? What I want to suggest is as follows. This is my, now, that's objective. So, now, once I have the drama, it makes sense to look for some interpretation. I just think in general, there's a need for chosenness, correct? God wants a nation. There's a purpose in that. There's a purpose in a chosen nation. There's a danger in chosenness. That the people chosen think they're better than everybody. That's a disaster. Being chosen means you're chosen to be better, not because you're better. And there's a need for leadership. There's a need for chosenness. There's a need for a special nation. But there's a danger in the people given that responsibility treating it as though they're privileged instead of responsible. And therefore, it's important at the end, it's not genetic. Got it? The fact that Bill and Zilpah's kids are in, and that there's a need for 12 tribes, there's a need for diversity, pluralism, and you can get your job done better if you want to be a model for 70 nations to work together and get along, as opposed to fighting with each other. You have to be the model within your nation. You have to be like in the micro, what will be later in the macro. So if we can have 12 different flags and 12 different tribes and 12 different outlooks, but respectfully argue, that's how nations, proper democracies, with different opinions. You can have conservative Republicans. You can all share the goal of building a healthy country and argue how to accomplish it. You can argue maturely. But that takes maturity to be able to do that. And that's sort of, I think, what's happening. We have to be the model of that. And therefore, the drama is critical in understanding the complexities of chosenness and the need to make sure we understand that our chosenness is a responsibility that comes with privilege, but the goal is that, that's why I said, it's not about blessing. It's about purpose. They're so happy you said, when I spoke to Patriarch, you're thinking that being a patriarch means being blessed. It's being charged. And that's a fundamental difference. Again, I'm not sure why three. It's drama. So I'm suggesting possible reasons for it. But I'm reading my outlook at life. But in general, nations can share common need, common good, work together, or they can fight with each other. Look at world history. And there's always reasons for wars, but there's always reasons for, yeah.
How are we doing?
I'll be kind and say a C minus. No. Listen, historically, we've gone from survival mode to revival mode. Listen, there's a difference between, like all the Midrashim and stuff, when you're a rabbi giving meaning to Judaism, when you're in exile, under persecution, and you're in survival mode, when everyone's trying to convince you, wake up, God left you. No, forget it. No, there's a whole new reason. God, as we leave, your God was right, the Old Testament, but we failed, you follow? And that's what it looks like. And that's what Christianity was saying all along. And trying to convince us, give up on your own thing. Now, it's easy for us. Why? Because we're back. No, they said it'll never happen. We're back in our land. We're people again. So that, in that sense, we've accomplished a lot because we're back to nationhood. Now, what do you do with that nation? It's a long process. You have to learn the hard way. But we've come a long way, holding on to that faith for 2,000 years, building a country. But with building that new country comes a lot of challenges. And with everyone with good things, we're missing a little bit of that maturity that you can have. We have different opinions about running things, not either my way or your way. Yeah.
Well, I'm understanding this maybe wrongly, but primarily related to internally in Israel, say like in Knesset, what have you. But out here in Dallas,
yeah.
What should we be doing? And like,
No, listen. The core understanding is a Jew. As a Jew, you're individual, you're a member of a community, member of a nation. You serve God primarily by how you act, how you interact in your workplace, your day-to-day life, how you talk with other people, how you run whatever job you do, how you talk about God, that we daven and we act in a proper way. And the Torah is our guide about how to behave, and we need tons of rituals to remember that. You can't do things without ritual, without halacha, and guidance and study.
Yeah. I guess the reason that I asked the question is just, and I don't mean to derail this slightest, but like, you mentioned that we're in revival mode, but I think that many people
still think we're in survival mode. I'm saying, if I want to understand the argument between the Haredi community and the sort of modern Orthodox world, they still hold they're in survival mode, and it's hard to go out of a coma. When you're in a coma, the body shuts down, just the heart keeps pumping. And you take all the resources to keep the heart pumping. That's Torah study. That's what I always say. From the time the temple was destroyed, we have four cubits of halakha, and that's it. And that keeps the heart pumping. Now, to take a patient off coma after being thousands of years in a coma, to get the body moving again, it's not easy. And there's a lot of squeaks and everything. Remember the Tin Man from Wizard of Oz? Yeah. I need some oiling. That after a while, he gets a heart. It takes a while, though, right? And experiences. You follow, remember the movie. And he needs a diploma to get his brain back and everything. Now, the Little Courage, remember that? Such a good movie. They don't make him like that anymore. It's complicated, but there's a lot. I'm saying that you're, on the one hand, you're accomplishing a lot, and at the same time, doing sometimes terrible things. Like we should be known as a nation of honesty, of kindness, greatness. When we're known as being, oppressing others, that's not healthy. On the other hand, we have to survive. So I understand the right-wing opinion that, if we give back too much, they'll kill us. And it's happened all through history. So I understand a strong right-wing opinion. On the other hand, it's not healthy. It's not good. We shouldn't be, it's our whole life, our whole Bible is about our learning, not is fighting oppression and not having, and to be in a situation where you have a military government over other people is not healthy. The problem is there is no solution. But the fact that there's no solution doesn't mean it's an ideal. It's living in the dialectic all the time, and it's not easy. It's a really hard challenge. So you could say, so maybe we have a country. We're stuck. We're back. God brought us back. What do we do? So there's what to pray for. But it's just, remember you're limping when you have to fight. And you shouldn't wave, you shouldn't be proud of it. Follow? You should, and you have to feel, you have to live that double. Israel, I think, faces, I give you the best example one with Ukraine. So all these refugees come out. So there's a big argument. We have to take our refugees, everyone country has to take the share of refugees. You can't flood your own country, you have to take a certain amount. Should we prefer to take Jewish refugees from Ukraine? Or Dafka non-Jewish refugees? Is that a great argument? We as God's people, we have to care about those. What refugees are more important to us? Our own people or other people? It's such a good argument. It's a healthy argument because there's sides to both. So you have to go for that. Those are, I always hold, like in high school, they should have, like, kids give tzedakah. So they should have, if kids can figure out ways to collect things, they should nominate what philanthropy to give to, and then have a committee that takes all the suggestions who we should donate to, and then make a decision of how to allocate. That would be such a great educational experience because they train them to be adults. Because you can't accomplish all your goals. You have to balance things and you have to allocate. And if that's something, you have to learn how to, values are, you have to balance values all the time. So it's not easy, but that requires leadership. And the main thing, if you don't study and learn, you won't have the tools to be able to resolve things like that. But it's always important to know what the idea that nation is not only about blessing, it's about purpose and covenant and responsibility. I think that's a key point. Okay, I think I got to get to the other group, right? Anyway, thank you. Okay.
Next week is the RuPaul's Moral Lecture. and then stay tuned for more information.